errors or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Stock Market Strategies on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Ed Handley, Certified Financial Planner, Senior Vice President Investments, Fulcrum Securities, LLC, and Portfolio Manager. Fulcrum Securities, a member of FINRA SIPC, clearing through Pershing, LLC, a subsidiary Bank of New York Mellon, member of the New York Stock Exchange. Well, program will focus on strategies for the financial markets with an emphasis on technical analysis and macroeconomics. We are a live call-in show. We'll take your questions this morning, if you so choose. Call-in numbers are 202-465-3080. Repeat, 202-465-3080. Programs are streamed to www.federalnewsradio.com. Click on Listen. Select the format. The programs are also archived. Just click on Stock Market Strategies. Actually, you go to Shows, Weekend on the right-hand side, and then Stock Market Strategies, okay? All right, I manage money for institution, retail accounts using combination stocks, bonds, ETFs, mortgage pools, currency, structured products, longs and shorts, almost any hedge that I can get. Top-down strategy analysis and tactical non-strategic allocation. Also run the Fulcrum Fee Program. You may contact me through my email address, edh@fulcrumsecurities.com. That's up on the site, I believe. That's edh@fulcrumsecurities.com. Telephone numbers during business hours are 866, not today, please, 866-689-4001. We also do the podcast twice a week, and those are up on my website. That's www.edhandley.com. All right, please remain the opinion views expressed during this broadcast are not to be considered specific recommendations. Individual investors' decision should only be made after considering one's own circumstances, including tolerance for risk. Investors should consider including fundamental, quantitative, and technical analysis before making final investment decisions. Okay, in about 2 hours, I'll begin my little seminar I'm doing today at the Arlington Library. That's off of Glebe Road on 1015 North Quincy. It's open. No reservations are required. So if you have interest, want to show up on this nice foggy day, be careful driving, then we will start at 10:30 to 12:30 at the Arlington Library, 1015 North Quincy. The topic is 2013, the coming market decline. Hope to shed some light on that for you this morning as we kind of spend some time on the market and get under the covers and see what's really going on so that you can glean some insights into why we are what we are. One thing I noticed on Friday was absolutely shocking, that we had a large inflow of money to the mutual funds this past week. That's the first time that's happened since September of 07. Sound familiar? You got to be really, really careful when the small investor finally realizes it's time to get in. That is such an ominous warning sign to you. So let's take a look at what we have on the overall market trading for the past week. Well, last week was kind of a flat after the previous week of being up significantly. I think we're up about 3.25% on the first on the S&P for the first 11 days here in January. So Thursday, the internals were pretty strong. Stocks were up okay. Went kind of flat for a good day on Thursday, flat on Friday. Had a down day Monday, Tuesday, up day on Wednesday, good strong day on Thursday, and a flat on Friday. On balance, it was a positive week. So the internals to me are suggesting that more upside is coming over the next few weeks. Stock hit a new closing high for the rally from December the 31st, suggesting, and I'm an Elliott wave guy, that wave two down of the five-wave rally for this C leg up is over, which means you get a push up, a flat, probably a flat and not a corrective action, and then a final push up. That should just about end this rally from November, and the highest probability is that we'll end the rally from March of 09. Bear in mind, when we came off of the bottom of in 02 and topped in 07, that we ran about 60 months on an up leg. 5 years, the second longest run in duration, like for 200 years. We are now approaching a four-year pattern from the low of March of 09. So this month, or not this month, but by March of 09 will have been 4 years, 48 months. Generally, that is about the maximum length of time that you're going to get on an up leg. So you've got time working against you in that this is getting rather long in the tooth, as they say. S&P 500 hit a new five-year closing high on Thursday. That's a closing high. Of course, we are reminded that back in September of the past year, we hit 1474, 1475 on the S&P 500 on an intraday basis. We closed at 1472 on Friday. That's a new closing high, not the high. However, in terms of technical analysis, hey, that looks like a double top, doesn't it? So you got to be really careful. But like I said, I don't think the pattern is complete yet. Thursday, new highs rose to 297. The 10-day average advanced decline line indicators also rose. Now, here's another important tip. Generally, what you will get, and like in this business, there is no such thing as always or never. Generally, what you will get is you will get a turn in the advanced decline line before your major indices peak out. That has not occurred yet. The advanced decline line is still doing quite well. So as long as that persists, we have a strong possibility that we will move even higher. Volume rose on the rally, which is short-term bullish. Demand power rose about 2 points. Supply fell about 4. That is also a good sign, telling us that the supply is drying. We haven't had the really strong demand, but that's okay. We can muddle through this indication. Most key indicators remain on buy, except perhaps for the 30-day stochastic. There was a small change in the McClellan oscillator on Thursday, suggesting a large price move is likely over the coming days. 60 and 30-minute full stochastics are overbought, suggesting a small corrective decline is possible. And after the move we had on Thursday with the flat on Friday, and again, it's end of week, sentiment gets twisted a little bit. There's a reluctance to take on additional long positions going in over the weekend because who knows what's going to happen in the global economies throughout the world before you open back up on a Monday. So, but, you know, you didn't really give up much of the Thursday advance. As a matter of fact, let me check a chart here for just a second. Trying to look at a Thursday move, Thursday the 10th. Yeah, you when you finished off the Thursday move, you'd had an advance from about 1459 to 1472, 12 points. You gave back about 5, close to a third. That is a bullish indication. Of course, that's on an hourly chart, so you got to be careful with that. So in any case, if we're going to get a little repeat from past history in here, then stocks need to rise to the upper boundary of the pattern that is forming, which is a broadening top from the market of early 2002 to where we are now. Now, the broadening top pattern, if you are able to push higher here, the broadening top pattern is a negative pattern. It indicates that when you make this push up, that you then are in store for a huge market decline. In any case, that boundary targets about 14,500 in the Dow Industrials over the coming weeks and the months. Side note, gold and mining stock should be bottoming soon, I believe, given the place where the weekly full stochastic set. So we shall see. If they continue to print exorbitant amounts of money, then that is bullish for gold. Now, I have a number of short-term indicators that I use on the overall general market. I'm going to give you some of my latest readings, and you'll notice that most of them buy signals. Dow Jones Industrial Average 14-day stochastic buy, 30-day stochastic sell. New York Stock Exchange 10-day advance decline line is on a buy. The NDX, that's the NASDAQ 100, 14-day stochastic buy, 30-day stochastic buy, 10-day advance decline buy. The Russell 2000 is also pushing near major new highs, if it hasn't already set one. You'll also find that on the Dow Jones Transports, you have the possibility in the short term here on the Transports of also establishing new all-time highs on the Transport Average, which closed flat on Friday at 55.72. The Russell 2010 advance decline line is on a buy. If I turn to gold, they're a little weaker. The HUI 30-day stochastic, that's the gold bug index, is on a buy. The 30-day is kind of on a buy, but the pattern is generally overall weak. Therein is a snapshot of the market. Now we turn to something a little more interesting. Kind of under covers, not paid, a lot of attention is not paid to this by some, but I find it to be a very important indication of what is happening. We know the market advance that we've had in here has been terrific since the November 15 low. And we know that a great deal of fuel that is or ammunition that is fueling the advance in the market is due to a lot of global printing of money, both in Europe. Now, Japan is the latest on the hook. And, of course, we have been printing money pretty massively in the QE1, QE2, QE3, QE4, QE forever. And the latest program is tuned at about $85 billion a month for the Federal Reserve doing purchases and printing money. One of the other major indicators of all of that is what is the percentage of stocks that are short, or the float in the market that is short. Because what happens is shorts eventually have to cover. When they do cover, then it's kind of like a game of chicken. The first guy who does it and the others follow, and they pay very close attention, those that are specialists in shorting the market. So if you look at overall percentage of stocks that are short of the float, you get some insights as to what is fueling the market and how much more that you may be able to get out of that. For instance, if we look at the S&P 15, I'll take the S&P 500. The S&P 500 in January of 08, the death year, was about peaked out at about 6%. It has now fallen to 3.75%. This is the same lows that we had in January of 11, January of 12, and now January of 2013, about 3.75%. In two of those three cases, it has risen to about 4.25%. Now, that doesn't sound much, but in the grand scheme of things on the S&P 500, that is a sizable amount of money. If we look at some of the more interesting stocks and look at the short interest report, as of the 10th of January, I believe. And you will find some of the – now you know why some of these stocks are getting really hammered. For instance, JCPenney is about 46% short. This is a company that's in deep trouble. First Solar in the technology space, solar panels, 37%. Safeway, a store that you would not – normally expect to have a high short interest. It's very defensive, thin margins. Consumer staples is about 30% short. Netflix, we all know that story there. It's about 25% short. U.S. Steel in the materials, 20%. Cliff Natural Resources in the iron ore, 20%. Chesapeake Energy, a company that has it's a difficult story. With Chesapeake, because of all the debt they've had, the leverage that they've taken up, and the restructuring that's going on as they switch from nat gas to liquid fuels. That's about 15% short. Seagate Technology, this is one that really caught me by surprise, because I consider it to be the leader in the hard disk drive space, is about 14% short. So you know that when you get covering of these issues, you're going to get an advance in these stocks. So you really have to stay on top of it and ahead of it. Some of the S&P 500 least favored shorted stocks, which stands to reason. You would these companies are very stable. They have nominal growth, but the risk and the volatility is diminished. Pepsi-Cola is like less than 1%. All of these are less than 1%. PepsiCo, Merck, ExxonMobil, Oracle, Wells Fargo, and Abbott Lab as an example. If I turn to the S&P 400, then I look at Deckers Outdoors, Green Mountain Coffee, Monsters Worldwide, Carbo Ceramics. That's in the energy space. That's a very interesting company, by the way. It's about 23% short, and then JetBlue is about 17% short. So it's kind of like a key that you need to be abreast of to figure out what is really driving the market. So speaking of what's driving the market, what's the next big agenda? Coming from the Hill, the negotiations over the debt ceiling and the sequestration. What are they going to do? Who knows? But I'm sure they're going to be intense. The Republicans had a very weak position negotiating on the tax increases, and of course we feel the results now that we've had like pretty sizable tax increase, if not the largest in history. During all of this now, we have the Wilshire 5000, which is another index that you'd pay attention to, has made an upside breakout and yesterday increased to its highest level since 2000, or day before yesterday, 2007. We know the Fed is going to do a cumulative about $250 to $60 billion in quantitative easing in the first quarter. That works out to be like $1 trillion a year annual rate. We don't know when the Fed is going to cut this off. They've kind of thrown some water on the fire saying, well, you know, we may not be able to extend this until 2015. We're concerned about the size of the balance sheet and the Federal Reserve. We may have to cut it off early, but we're looking for 6.5% unemployment. What's a better sign than a 6.5% unemployment? Because by the time you get there, the action will already happen and the market will already move. Look for 200,000 jobs a month. That's the key. 200,000 jobs per month. That's kind of the number you need to make inroads to 6.5% unemployment. Over in China, which has done quite well, we had the December CPI rose to about 2.5% year over year. That should cool that market off a little bit because of potential rising inflation, particularly since it's food inflation, which personally, in my belief, is ag is one of the great spaces that everyone should be tuned into because it is getting harder and harder to feed all these people. The grand bargain. Okay. What was perceived that would happen that did not? It was perceived that President Obama would find it an interest to reach a grand bargain, reducing the deficit by about $2.5 trillion over 10 years. That did not happen. Given his election victory, he could have had the grand bargain largely on Democratic terms. The latest deal offered by the House was $1 trillion in tax hikes and $1 trillion in spending cuts, not counting interest savings. Very close to what we thought a grand bargain would look like to win a majority in the House. President Obama's offer never came close to that. Now they're going to go negotiate again. I will assure you, this one will be much more difficult than the little mini fiscal cliff bump, speed bump, gradual slope, whatever it was that we had. This one will be a lot more difficult. Now, you need to get this done by about the middle of February, the end of March. Secretary Geithner has come up with another $200 billion that he can forestall, actually having exceeded our debt limits, which gives us another $200 billion to play with. And that works out to about the 15th of February or the beginning of March. So that's when the deal needs to be done. This is going to be hard negotiation, and I would expect it to start in earnest almost any time. But like everything that happens on the Hill, it only happens at the very last possible moment. So we have risk of default and downgrades and sequestration. Some of the things that are kind of like offsets to all of that would be the home prices. The home builders are doing much, much better. As I mentioned, the Wilshire is indicating a possible coming upside breakout. That's doing great. Gives you a broad indication of the market. The Mexican economy is doing particularly well. Manufacturing PMI is up around 55. Japan is printing money like there's no tomorrow. The yen has weakened from 77.5 to almost 89. I would remind you years past that this traded at 100 to the dollar. It looks like it's heading that way. Gasoline prices are stable. We've had huge global easing cycles unfolded with a multitude of stimuluses to the market. Latest house price survey has got a great-looking pattern coming off of the 09 lows, and bank stocks, which tend to lead economic activity, and for the nimble and those that could probably do them with an ETF or a closed-end fund or an open-ended fund in the short term, look like they can get another push to the upside. They're kind of like surging all over the place. In addition to that, we've had a sudden increase in M2. M2 is down like $10 trillion, so it's on an increasing slope. And the Fed monetary base has made a push, breakout push to the upside. So if we look at all the fiscal stimuluses that have gone on over there, some of the more importance that has occurred over the last year, in my view, would be that Brazil cut the rates 50%, Operation Twist, the continual quantitative easing. The ECB offers banks unlimited cash for 3 years. The ECB lent $640 billion. Fed says the rates will stay low until late 2014, but then they've caveated that to say, well, perhaps we stop the QE in 2013. So we'll see. Draghi has said the ECB will do whatever it takes to preserve the euro. The pressure has come off of the defaults over there and off of Greece, but they will continue to need more money. But what is even a more serious worst case, in my opinion, is Spain. The officials agree on the ECB unlimited bond purchases. The Fed's got a new round of bond buying to the tune of $85 billion a month. European finance ministers cut Greece interest rates, gave it more time. Fed ties the rates to joblessness. And Japan, on the latest, announced $136 billion stimulus. Speaking of Japan, take a look at the chart. Back in, let me see if I can read this. Oh, I think it was like in the 60s. Pardon me, I guess. Pardon me, I had to sneeze. You were trading the yen. Oh, it was just so awful sight. 200 or 300, I think, to the dollar. And now it is going down, down, down. But if you draw a line on the trend line from back in the, I think it was the 80s. Yeah, the 80s. If you draw that trend line, you're going to find you got 4 data points, and you are about to break out of that. That's a very, very important chart, and is indicating to you that the yen is going to be more yen to the dollar. So if you put all of this in perspective throughout the world with the yen, the euro, the quantitative easing, the dollar, it is a race to devalue the currency the fastest. Who will be successful and who will be left behind? As a consequence, since we've all three of those, the U.S., Europe, and Japan have started doing this, they will continue and continue and continue because all the currencies are relative to each other, aren't they? Yes, they are. But as a consequence of all of that, then you are going to create inflation. And that is that is the task at hand, to prevent, subdue, cut, eliminate deflation in order to get inflation, in order to make the world economies grow and monetize the debt over time. This is what is happening. So the Japan is going to be the forerunner of all of this. I would suspect that we are all going to continue. Now, unfortunately, none of this is a great stimulus to growth. What we really have going on here in the economies is zero-sum thinking and the redistribution policies, which has nothing to do with things taken from whom, has everything to do with things taken from some and given to others, but it's not a tremendous impetus in growing the economy. So this is going to take some while before all of this changes. As I mentioned, the monetary base has shown a sudden increase, which means there's more money being floated throughout the systems. The banks may want to set interest rates higher than otherwise would be warranted to bring inflation back to target, the typical 6 to 8 quarter time frame. We shall see. Now, somewhere down the road, this will be inflationary to commodity prices. So right now in the short term, banks lead it higher. Then that will revert, hopefully, in order to grow the economy, to inflation in the commodity space. So for the long-term investor, you got to be looking at the commodity space. For the short-term investor, you're looking to see if you can capitalize on the remaining run that's coming from the banks. They look very stable. The earnings have started. They're all going to be very, very similar. One thing that I did notice when Wells Fargo came with their earnings, they were quite handsome compared to expectations, and the stock traded down. So that little suggestion, not a recommendation, by the way, means you better be very careful and very nimble in that space. We're also noticing that bonds are starting to sell off, which means the inflation bugs may be winning. Hope you enjoyed. Hope you have a chance to come to the library, Arlington, at 10:30 for 2 hours of talks about the market. Have a great weekend, and I'll be talking to you next weekend.
FederalNewsRadio.com, your one-stop shop for all things federal. Listen daily to interviews with federal managers and government contractors. Read Mike Causey's daily federal report, or just stop by for an update on the latest news affecting the federal community. FederalNewsRadio.com, your source for federal news now.
Hey, everybody, it's David and Nikki Nellis from the wildly popular and always topical Foodie and the Beast.
Next Sunday, January 13th, we are kicking it off with coffee. Joel Finkelstein is in. He is the owner and head roaster at Quala Coffee. We're going to talk wine with Mira Winery out of California. And Joe Nathan is back. We're talking sips and sups.
That's Foodie and the Beast next Sunday and every Sunday live at 11 on 1500 AM.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now. This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts